You remember a time when you were happy, when you had you held your little baby for the first time, you saw a sunset that you liked very much, you had a pet that you loved very much and would hold, anything that would get that feeling of love going. Loving kindness feeling is a warm, glowing feeling in the center of your chest. As soon as that feeling arises, then you let go of that memory that brought the feeling up, and you start to make a wish for your own happiness. May I be happy. May my mind be peaceful and calm. May my mind be filled with joy. The key to making a wish for your own happiness is that it is a sincere wish. The more sincere the wish is, the easier it is to have that feeling of loving kindness grow. Now, while you're sitting and doing this, you will have wandering thoughts. Your mind will begin to think about other things. And as soon as you notice that your mind is thinking about other things, then simply let go of those thoughts. Don't continue thinking them. And you'll notice that there's some tightness in your head, in your mind, every time you have a thought. And what you want to do is relax that tightness in your head. You can actually feel it open up and become calm. And then you bring that mind back to the feeling of being happy and making a sincere wish for your own happiness. It doesn't matter how many times your mind wanders away. Every time you notice that your mind has wandered, then let go of that wandering thought, relax, let go of any tightness, tension in your head, in your mind, and simply redirect your attention back to the feeling of being happy and making a wish for your own happiness. Your mind might get attached to some idea of thinking that your mind shouldn't be so active, that it should be more controllable, and these kind of things. That's just critical mind coming out. We want to let go of that. It's all right that your mind wanders away. Thoughts are not your enemy. While you're sitting in meditation, you want to sit with your back reasonably straight. You want to sit without moving your body for any reason at all. Don't wiggle your toes, don't wiggle your fingers, don't scratch, don't rub, don't rock, don't change your posture. You can move as much as this Buddha image behind me moves, which isn't a whole lot. Now, if you start to have sleepiness arise, you'll notice that your back starts to slump a little bit and your head goes down and you start to feel sleepy. Then it's all right to straighten your posture. But don't do that a whole lot either. While you're sitting like this, there can be some sensations that arise in your body. You can have a sensation of wanting to cough or sneeze. There can be a sensation of itching or heat, pain, whatever, tension. You'll notice when these kind of sensations arise, especially a cough. You feel bad if you have to cough while you're meditating because you think you'll disturb somebody else. And the first thing your mind does is it starts talking to you about how you don't really want to cough and how you want that cough to go away. And of course that makes the cough bigger and more intense, and then you wind up coughing a lot. But your job as a meditator is to notice that your mind is thinking about that sensation and let go of the thoughts. Notice the tightness in your head, in your mind, and relax. Now notice that tight mental hold you have around that sensation of wanting to cough. Pain, any kind of sensation. And with that tight mental sensation, what you want to do is recognize it's there. And that tight mental sensation is a feeling of aversion. You don't want it there. You want it to be different than it is. You want it to go away. But the truth of the present moment is when a sensation arises, it's there. You're liking it, you're trying to control it, you're trying to make it be something other than it is only a cause of more suffering. So what we need to do is let go of that tight mental hold around that sensation. Allow that sensation to be there. It's all right for that sensation to be there. It has to be all right because it's there. After you let go of that tight mental hold, then relax any tension or tightness in your head, in your mind, and gently redirect your attention back to the feeling of being happy and making a wish for your own happiness. The nature of these kind of sensations is that they don't go away right away. So your mind will go back to that sensation and you might begin thinking about it again, so you let go of the thoughts and relax the tightness in your head, in your mind. And then you let go of that tight mental hold, that death grip around that sensation. And allow that sensation to be. Let it float. It doesn't matter whether it's there or where it goes. Just allow it to be. Then relax any tightness or tension in your head, in your mind, and gently come back to wishing yourself well. That sincere wish that you really do wish for yourself. And the feeling of being happy. That's the most important part of this meditation, is the feeling of happiness. After about 10 minutes, then you begin to send loving and kind thoughts to a spiritual friend. A spiritual friend is someone of the same sex. They are alive, and to begin with, not a member of your family. During this part of the training period, we don't want to work with family members. That will happen later as your progress in the meditation grows. So you're sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself. May I be happy. May my mind be peaceful and calm. As I feel this happiness and peace, I wish this feeling for you. May you be happy. Now, when you start sending loving and kind thoughts to your spiritual friend, it's the same spiritual friend for the whole sitting and the same spiritual friend for every sitting. Until I tell you to change. So Don't change your spiritual friend from one person to another person. A spiritual friend is someone that when you think of them and their good qualities, it makes you happy. Someone that you've seen do things that were really nice and helpful to other people, and it made you happy too. That's a spiritual friend. That's a good friend. Of course, not everybody's 100%. You might see a spiritual friend make a mistake and do something that caused a little bit of unhappiness too. But don't let your mind dwell on that. Let your mind only dwell on the good things, the things you like about them, their good qualities, how you like them. While you're doing this, you also want to visualize your friend. See your friend in your mind's eye. And it doesn't matter whether it's like a still photograph, a still picture, or if they're moving around. It doesn't matter. It can be like a motion picture with them moving, doing this or that, or it can be like a still picture, whatever is right at the time. When you see your spiritual friend, you want to see them smiling and happy. So when you visualize your friend, you see them with a smiling face. And this can help remind you to be smiling too. This is a smiling meditation. You smile in your mind. Even though your eyes are closed, you smile with your eyes. And this lets go of all kinds of tension in your face. You put a little smile on your lips and a smile in your heart. The corners of your mouth are very important. If the corners of your mouth go down, your mental states go down. When the corners of your mouth go up, your mental states go up. The visualization can be somewhat difficult. It can be cloudy, it can be fuzzy, it can be wavy, it's a long ways away, it's there for just a moment, then disappears. And that doesn't matter too much. Try, but don't try too hard. For some people, visualization is very easy. For other people, it's difficult, and that's okay. You want about 70% of your attention on the feeling of being happy. You want about 20% of your attention on making a wish that helps the feeling to get stronger. And only about 10% of your attention on visualizing your friend. So you can see that the feeling of loving kindness is much more important than visualizing. Whenever the feeling of loving kindness starts to fade a little bit, that's when you make a sincere wish for your friend's happiness. It's a heartfelt wish. You really do wish them well. Now, you can make up your own wish. It doesn't matter. You don't have to use the wishes that I gave. Your wish is an uplifting wish, a wholesome wish that sincerely has meaning for you. When you make a wish, feel that. In other words, if you make a wish for somebody's happiness, feel happiness in your heart. If you make a wish for somebody to be peaceful and calm, feel peace and calm in your heart. if you make a wish for them to have a clear, observant mind, feel what it's like in your heart. So now we're going to sit for 30 minutes. The first 10 minutes is spent sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself. The rest of the time, send loving and kind thoughts to your spiritual friend. Now gently let go of your meditation and open your eyes whenever you're ready. When you move while you're meditating, you're not really having a chance to watch what your mind is doing and not seeing the aversion that you have to different feelings when they arise, and you start identifying very strongly with them. And you try to think the feeling away. Now, we're made up of this process. This mind and body process is made up of five different things. You have a physical body, you have feelings, you have perception, you have thoughts, and you have consciousness. Now, thoughts are one thing, and feelings are something else, and we can't control the feelings with the thoughts. It just doesn't work. That's why in the instruction I tell you that when a feeling arises, the first thing your mind does is try to think about it. Why is it there? Why doesn't it leave me alone? I don't like this feeling. I want it to stop. All of those thoughts make the feeling bigger and more intense because you're trying to control the feeling. It doesn't work. So you have to let go of the thoughts about the feeling. And then notice that mental hole that you have, that you don't like them with that feeling, and relax. And as soon as you do that, it changes from my feeling and I don't like it to it's only a feeling. And it's all right for it to be there. Now, I have spent a lot of time visiting people in hospitals that have extreme pains, cancers, all different kinds of things. And my message to them is to open up and relax. And that changes the intensity of the pain. It becomes much more bearable when you're able to relax into it. And I understand that it's not an easy thing. Especially when you first begin meditating, you have a lot of restless feelings that come up. You have a lot of pains that can arise. Now, what happens when you first start sitting is now you're not moving your body, and you'll start to notice pains arise where you never saw them before, because they just start arising and then you shift your posture so you don't have to see it. But now when you sit, you get to see that. And it's an unpleasant feeling. It really is. It's painful. It hurts. But you're giving into the feeling, and moving means that you don't really learn from it. So what we want to do is try to develop the determination not to move and to watch how mind works around these things and how mind tries to grab on and change. And this is the source of all of our suffering. So the more you can practice at being still while you're sitting, the more opportunity you give yourself to watch the movements of mind and how mind reacts to certain kind of stimulus, which you don't really recognize until you start sitting. Now, when the Buddha was doing his teaching, he taught in a very systematic manner. And the first thing he would always talk about whenever he gave a discourse was the importance of practicing generosity. And it can't be understated, the importance of practicing your generosity, because when you're able to let go of physical things, mental things are much easier to let go of. If you grab on to physical things and tightly hold on to them, then when you come up to a painful sensation or a desire or something like that, it becomes overwhelming. Now, this is a spiritual aspect that is in some religions is very strongly taken advantage of. People will come along, you hear it on television occasionally, send me money. But the spirit of generosity is to practice your generosity as much as you possibly can in your daily activities. You practice giving help to other people in one way or another. Either physically getting them, buying them some food, or giving them food, or sharing your food, or giving of your time and your energy to help. That's very important, and it softens your mind. It's necessary. Now, the Buddha gave some real nice instructions in how you practice your generosity. He said, when you prepare your gift, then prepare it with a happy mind. And while you're giving your gift, give it with a happy mind. And after you've given the gift, then reflect later on giving that gift and how happy you felt, and do that with a happy mind. The Buddha said that sharing food or giving food is giving life. That's kind of an amazing statement right there. But when you stop and think about it, that's more important than anything else, is food. Without food, you die. So when you give food to someone else, you're helping them in a lot of different ways so that they will continue, so that they'll... And their mind will go from being unhappy because they're hungry to happy because they're full. That's a wonderful gift. There's a story about monks always kind of do wholesome things to an extreme. And the Buddha said in one discourse, he said, if you practice your generosity, he was talking to monks, he said, if you practice your generosity every day, sharing your food every day, the benefits you get from doing that will be unbelievable. And if you want the highest benefit, you have to do it every day for 12 years. So what's happened, this practice has developed in the Asian countries, of a monk will share every day. And what the way he would practice sharing is with his food. Now when a monk goes out on alms round, he gets food. And when he comes back to a monastery, he would go to the head monk and show him whatever food was there, and the head monk would take whatever he wanted. And then you go to the next one, and he would take whatever he wanted. And you keep on going with as many monks as there are. Now, if you have to go back and go on alms round again, then you do that. You do that till everybody in the monastery has the food that they want. But you always come back. You go out one time, you start with a head monk. The next time, you start with a head monk again, because it might be different food. There might be other things that he wants. and you go by seniority when you're offering things. Now the trick to this, that in itself is fairly easy, but the trick is after giving the food, you can't hold one thought of remorse, one wish that I hadn't have done that. Now sometimes monks will do things and they annoy other monks. And they might have given him some food and then thought, oh, he's not a good monk, I shouldn't have done that. Why did I do that? Now, he doesn't get any benefit when he does that. So for 12 years, you go out practicing your alms round, practicing giving your generosity, practicing giving your energy to continue the Sangha and continue life. And always at the end, you eat whatever you want, whatever's left over. So there's a story about the Buddha was walking through a forest. And, of course, there was always 500 arahats that were following him around wherever he went. And they were going through one part of the forest where there was nobody that lived and nobody wandered through that part of the forest. So one of the monks went up to him and said, "Venerable sir, we're going through a very desolate part of the forest. Should we go on alms round now?" Because it was in the morning. "Should we get our food now and take our food before we go through? Or are we just going to go without any food?" That's always an option too. And the Buddha said, "Not to worry. This one monk has been practicing this generosity, and he's done it for a very long period of time. With him along, no one will ever go hungry." So they got to this desolate place, and the Buddha actually told this monk to walk in front. And then he walked a little ways and sat down. He opened up his bowl, and his bowl was full of food. And the monks would come up to him, and he would give them food. And he fed 500 people. Now, in the scriptures, it says that if you really do this, this is a very difficult practice. It's not an easy thing to do this every day for 12 years without having any remorse in your mind at all. But in the scriptures it says if any monk does that, that wherever he is when it's time for lunch, he'll always have food. He can be in the middle of the ocean, he can be in the desert without anybody else around. When it's time to eat, there's food in his bowl. Which is kind of a nice thing, I would think. But that gives you an idea of what happens when you practice your generosity, especially with food. Now, you're in a very prosperous country. There's more than enough food to go around. Why do you live here instead of someplace like where they're going hungry in Africa, where the drought has lasted for 5 or 6 years and there's no food available and people are starving to death? Why are you not there? Because in the past you practiced your generosity in giving food to other people. And the benefit is that you get what you give. So in the past you practiced your generosity. Now you're living in a country that has phenomenal wealth. Unbelievable wealth. If you want that trend to continue, then practice your generosity as much as you can. And the best way is to feed monks, of course, because we are completely dependent on the kindness of other people. But if there aren't any monks around, you pick virtuous people to share your food with. Now, the Buddha said that if you saw the importance of sharing your food, you would never eat alone. You'd never eat a meal without sharing some part of it with someone else. It's really an important aspect that it tempers, the act of giving tempers your greedy mind. It helps your mind to become calm and more relaxed, more open, more willing to let go of things as they come by. So this first aspect of practice of generosity is very, very important. And the more generous you can be, not only with the temple, not only with monks, but with everyone around you, the more you can give of your energy, your time, your effort, your material things, the happier your life becomes. It's that simple. And it's pretty amazing. Monks get a lot of things given to them. We get a lot of things given to us. Not only food, but we get a lot of other material things. And we collect with one hand and give out with another. We're not particularly attached to anything. When I was in Australia, I had been practicing generosity quite intensely for a while. And when I went to Australia, it was the longest day of the year on this side of the world, but down there it was the shortest day of the year, and I didn't realize it. And it was cold. And I didn't have any socks. I went to a monastery. I stayed there for 2 days. In those 2 days, 6 pairs of socks all of a sudden appeared. Amazing. And then I went to another monastery, and there was another 6 pairs of socks that appeared. And I started walking around saying, I don't need any more socks. No more. And I gave away 9 pairs to other monks that I'd run across because they didn't have any. Fine. That's good. No problem. When you start to lose your attachment to the material world, you start being more willing to live simply. Now, when I was in Burma, I got invited to go out and teach meditation in the countryside. And there was somebody along that was doing the translating, of course. I don't speak Burmese. And I was truly amazed that these simple people, they were farmers. They didn't work overly hard. They didn't have a lot of distractions in their life. And their spiritual progress was phenomenal. When people live out in the country and they don't have all of these distractions, they don't have all the bright lights and the different places to go and do things, and they just start living more and more simply, their mind becomes naturally more and more peaceful and calm. And of course, people in the city, when somebody from the country visits people in the city, the people in the city make fun of them. Because they're jealous, I think. But the more simply we can live without a lot of material things, the more easily we can live. Now, when I was in Malaysia, the economy was up and coming. And everybody had to own their own house. They had to have their own car. They had to have all of the furniture. Of course, you have to have a marble floor. You have to have all of these incredibly expensive things. And they were spending huge amounts of time and energy working to support this material stuff. So one day I gave him a Dhamma talk, and I asked somebody before the Dhamma talk, I said, how many hours a week do you have to work to have this automobile and the insurance and the gasoline and the oil and all of the things? How many hours a week do you have to work? How many hours a week do you have to work to support this brand new house? The fancy. How many hours a week do you have to work to support all of the different gadgets that you're putting in the house that you didn't used to need? Now, if we took all of those and added them up, you have to work 40, 50 hours a week just to support the material things that you think is important. But time is much more important than money. Much more important. If you don't believe me, ask somebody that has cancer, that they're dying. Which do they want? They want $1 million or they want to have a longer life? And the quality of life that these simple people had was very good. They lived in small villages. They would help each other with whatever needed to be done. Even things like carrying buckets of water and all kinds of things. They would help each other. They were always willing to share and practice their generosity in the simplest of ways. When you get into the city, you lose that a lot. A lot of people don't even know who their next door neighbor is. They don't know how to help other people. And I think that's a real sad state of affairs for this culture, if you can call it that. I'm not sure you can call Americans cultured at all. So caught up in, I want more. I want it bigger, I want it better, I want it faster. I want the newest one. But when it comes to being able to watch their mind, not so interested in that. Becoming more so. But still, there's an awful lot of distractions. Now, the Buddha's path is a gradual training. And the first aspect of this gradual training is practicing your generosity, practicing helping. And if you want to come and help here at the monastery by making the yard look nice, that's fine. Do that. That's good. If you want to help by supporting the temple, that's good. If you want to help by bringing food to help feed the monks, that's good. If you want to go start going to hospitals and visiting people that are sick, that's good. If you want to go to nursing homes and be with people that are getting old but they get lonely, go out and hang out with them, give them your time and energy, that's good. When you practice your generosity, you stop looking in so much and you start looking out. You stop being selfish and you start being more and more open, more willing to do things that are really, really nice to help other people. Now, this meditation fits right in with that, doesn't it? The more you can practice the loving-kindness meditation, the more uplifted your mind becomes, the happier your mind becomes. The more you want to see other people smiling and happy, the more you're willing to do that. It's real important. Another aspect in the gradual training is the taking and keeping of the five precepts. If you want to develop your mind at all, you need to take and keep the five precepts very, very, very closely. And that doesn't mean, oh, when I go home, I'll just have one glass of wine. That's okay. Or I'll just say this one thing that's a little white lie. That's okay. Or it's okay to kill these bugs because they're bothering me. It means don't break any of the five precepts. Not for any reason. And you'll notice over a period of time that your awareness becomes much sharper, and you know what you're going to do and say before you do and say it. And you temper your mind and body doing the right things at the right time. There was one lady in Malaysia that she came and she wanted to practice meditation with me. That's good. She was very virtuous, sweet young lady. She was about 25 or 26 years old. She was very active in helping little children. She was a teacher. She was going to Sunday schools and teaching in Sunday school. She was spending her time visiting her kids during the week, and just really a sweet young lady. Very nice. And she said, okay, I want to start practicing with you. And when she practiced every day. She followed the directions exactly. And in about 2 weeks, she started talking about how fast her mind was becoming calm and peaceful, how the joy and the happiness were starting to come out, how she really could experience this loving-kindness meditation. Now, this is half hour a day for 2 weeks, and here she is talking about some fairly advanced states of meditation. And I was going to give a 2-week retreat, and she came and practiced meditation with me for 2 weeks and went to phenomenal heights very quickly. And the reason she did that was because she practiced her generosity and she kept her precepts very closely. It can't be stated often enough, the importance of these things, but everybody that hears them, they think, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can do that until you're walking down the street and you see somebody that's hungry and you give them a piece of fruit. Watch the expression on their face when they eat it. The practice of loving kindness is not a sometime practice. It's an all the time practice. It's not just about sitting and being peaceful and calm. It's about learning how your mind works and start directing it in more and more wholesome, uplifting ways. Learn how to affect the world around you in a positive way. And you do that first by practicing smiling with your mind and your face. And then you practice with your physical energy. You practice your loving kindness by helping other people, by being generous, by keep on opening and relaxing and helping and making yourself happy, making other people happy. I've considered a few times at the start of each class have everybody recite the five precepts. And the reason I've considered that is because this is not some kind of rite or ritual. I know a lot of people that can rattle off the precepts and go around and break them all day. It doesn't mean anything to them. What we have to do is realize that these things really do affect your mind. When you break a precept, your mind says, I shouldn't have done that, and then you feel guilty.